research to support it, that if there is a bias in the media here, it's pro-Palestinian, certainly by comparison with other countries. The view that the Irish media as a whole is vehemently anti-Israel is in fact the one taken with no particular sense of irony by prominent columnists and our very best-selling newspapers, who are very strongly pro-Israel. So if you're reading Ian O'Doherty or Kevin Myers or Owen Harris, indeed, they will tell you in our best-selling newspapers that the media here are all very anti-Israel. In any case, I hope that we can get past that particular demarcation that when we're talking about bias, we're always talking about is it pro-Israeli bias on the one hand, or is it pro-Palestinian bias on the other, and look at other possible axes and dimensions to the question of media bias in the Middle East, and hopefully also get past what researchers call the hostile media effect, which is a kind of a confirmation bias in the way we perceive bias. In other words, we always think the media is on the other side of the argument, that the media is always against us. So we may see that played out, but hopefully we can get past that a little bit too. And of course, look at what bias means as well, because bias doesn't necessarily mean that coverage is inaccurate, but it usually implies at least that it's incomplete, that it's prejudicial, that it's in its choice of words or sources or the skewing of its editorial page. And we may look at the question of whether it is ever possible to not be biased in the coverage of a question like this. So those are some of the general issues that we'll try to cover. I'm not going to talk as much as this ever again for the rest of the night until I'm having a drink with some of you afterwards. And I want to turn the session over to first to Bob Fisk. Maybe he can address the question of bias in the video that we just saw, and in as much as he's observed the Irish media in relation to the Palestinian-Israeli question.
Well, as you can probably realize from that clip, actually it was filmed on real film, not on video originally, that was an attempt to show what the Syrians were really like without actually sitting there pontificating about what a horrible regime. You saw the armed secret policemen. You saw how I played up to the fear that other people had of them. That was sufficient to get over to you if you didn't know that Syria, Syria's military and Syria's dictatorship is a very dodgy sort of affair. on the larger point, I think I'd say this. You know, when I started off as a journalist in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, we were always taught that we have to give 50% of our story to one point of view and 50% to the other. So if you were covering Blythe Spartans in Northumberland against Gateshead in a football match, you gave 50% of your report to each side. If you were covering an opening of a new motorway, there was a public inquiry, you gave half your story to the protesters, half to the local authorities. But the Middle East is not a football match, it's a bloody tragedy. And I think that our duty as foreign correspondents must be to be unbiased and neutral on the side of those who suffer. When I was in Jerusalem in August of 2001, the clock already ticking towards September, of course, an Islamic Jihad suicide bomber walked into the Sbarro pizzeria, not very far from where I was having lunch, and blew himself up among a group of Israelis, more than half of them children, killed 16. I got on the scene very quickly. There was an Israeli child with no eyes, and an Israeli woman dead with a table leg through her. And my story that night was about the survivors and the dead. I did not give equal time to the spokesman from Islamic Jihad claiming that their executioner, which is what a suicide bomber is, had killed, murdered, of course, all these people. Equally, when I was in the Sabra Shatila massacre, before it ended in Beirut in 1982, 1,700 Palestinians killed by Israel's phalangist Christian Lebanese allies, as the Israeli army watched, which was fully proved by the Gahan Commission report in Israel the following year, I did not give equal space to the excuses of the Israeli army. I gave my report over to the Palestinians who had died in this savagery and to those who had survived. Just as, for example, if you were covering the slave trade in the 18th century, if you could have done it, you would not be giving equal time to the slave ship captain. You'd be talking to the slaves, writing about those who'd been thrown overboard. If you were present at the liberation and extermination camp in Nazi Germany, you would be writing about the victims and about the survivors. You would not be giving equal time to what Hitler or the SS thought about it, we would pretty much know. So I think it's essential. You've got to be a human being. You've got to remember that your job is to talk about those who suffer, because that is about injustice. And the Middle East is not about primarily democracy, perhaps it should be. It's not primarily about human rights, although heavens above, the people of the Middle East deserve some packages of human rights off our supermarket shelves. It is about injustice, injustice, injustice. And our failure to deal with that, to have these constant stupid peace process conferences, meetings in Washington, to help, of course, Obama in the midterm elections, not to help the Middle East, is a diversion away from the reality. I go constantly to Israel itself, of course. I fly into Israel and I travel all over Israel, as well as the West Bank and Gaza. And there you see the tragedy in front of yourself. And it is a tragedy, of course, for the Israelis too, although one has to say they are the occupiers. You know, Palestinian tanks are not in the streets of Tel Aviv, and there's no doubt who is suffering most. And I'm afraid you have to go in there and tell it how it is. I have the good fortune, I always say this because it's true, not because it's a publicity stunt, to say that I work for a paper that prints what I write, and that makes the risks, which are real and dangerous, worthwhile. I think that's probably, I've said my bit there.
Maybe we'll move from the Middle East, from the direct experience of the Middle East to an Irish perception of the of this question. John, if you wouldn't mind coming in here.
I suppose in terms of the question of media bias, you can look at it in many, many different ways. There's bias within a news story and there's bias in terms of what you choose to cover. I think this was best summed up for me a couple of weeks ago when I was browsing the Huffington Post, which I'm sure some people in the room, at least maybe most of you know, is a major American online news service, broadly on the center-left, aligned with the liberal wing of the American media system. There was a news story on it about Ireland, and it was about a girl in Cork whose name I've now forgotten, but you can all go and check the story when you go home. A 19-year-old girl who got 600 points in her leaving cert, who decided to volunteer with the Israeli Defense Forces. And she went to Israel, she volunteered at the IDF, I don't know what she was doing with the IDF, but she came back and she wrote a letter about her experiences to her local newspaper in Cork. She was then spat out on the street, and she wrote for the Huffington Post and they covered the story. The Irish Times did not cover the story, nor did the Irish Independent, Sunday Tribune did. Sunday Tribune coverage was written by a girl called Jennifer Bray, who's a wonderful journalist. And in the end of her piece, she mentioned that the Irish girl had been with the IDF during the week that it, and I'm quoting directly, murdered 15 activists aboard the MV Marby Marmara. Now, I don't think it's the role of a news journalist reporting the facts to attribute casually in the news story, which isn't about the issue at hand, the word murder, to a highly charged situation like what happened in the Marby Marmara. I don't think that's the role of a journalist, and I think it happens far too often in this country where you casually drop words like that into what's supposed to be a factual, objective piece. Secondly, I don't doubt for one moment that if the girl from Cork had gone to volunteer with the Palestinian movement, or the PLO, or a charity working in Palestine, and had come back and been assaulted or abused by pro-Israeli protesters on the streets, I do not doubt for one moment that that story would have been covered by the Irish Times, the Irish Independent, and various other media outlets. Bias is not necessarily about how you cover a story, it's about the stories that you choose to cover, the angles that you choose to report, and the emphasis you choose to place. Bob, in his, when he very eloquently spoke a few moments ago, said that he chooses to report from the perspective of the oppressed and the perspective of the victim and the people who are suffering, and that's a laudable goal. But when you are in the media, when you're reporting something like that, your perspective, stop my word. Hello?
I could blame Moffat for trying to stop the proceedings, but that would be churlish. I think that if you try and say I'm going to work for it on behalf of people who are oppressed and people who are suffering, and don't say I'm going to objectively report the facts of the situation, people who are reading your story have brains. They can look at a story, and when they read the facts of what happened in the situation, they can say, they can make up their own minds and say, this was wrong, these people acted correctly, and these people did not. When you choose, and I'm not saying, Bob is a fine journalist, Robert's a fine journalist who's done great things, but I think that when you go into journalism and you go into media with the attitude that I am going to report from the perspective of the people who I think deserve the most coverage, as opposed to reporting from the perspective of what a reader would like to know about the situation, in terms of the reactions and the justifications that either side gets, whether they be the Islamic Jihad or the Israeli Defense Forces or Syrian intelligence, then I don't think you can avoid laying yourself open to allegations of bias. That's my view. And in terms of my view, I think there is a hefty pro-Palestinian bias in the media. And I wouldn't even call it pro-Palestinian. I call it anti-Israeli in terms of how news is reported, not how comment is reported. Not whether or not there's a balance in commentary, if there is, but in terms of how news stories are reported and where the emphasis is placed, I do think there's a pro-Palestinian bias.
Richard, do you want to comment?
I mean, I would be coming from a very different place to John, but I agree with him completely that this sort of gratuitous association of one story with another for the purposes of slanting a story in a particular way or giving you a particular perception is wrong to do so. But I have to say that my perception of how Middle Eastern issues are represented in the media is generally that sort of gratuitous use of emotive language or associations, particular types of associations that are essentially supposed to discredit the subject of the story, tend much more to be associated with the Palestinian or Islamic groups that are in conflict with Israel or with the Western powers. And I would say, you know, and maybe I would say this, and I'm probably guilty of what Harry called it, the media hostile effect, that we're always, is that what it's called? Media hostile, the hostile media effect. But I would say this is also true of anti-war protesters, and I think we had a pretty graphic example of it at the weekend with the protests that took place against Blair, where there was an insistence on the part of papers such as the Irish Times and Tommy O'Gorman for RTE in refusing to mention the Irish anti-war movement, which is, if you like, might be described as a broad, more inclusive organisation, and insisting on emphasising the presence of dissident Republican groups at the beginning of the thing, even though they were not the main organisers. So there was a clear attempt to say that the prime movers behind the protesters were these dissident Republican groups who I think most of us would not subscribe to their viewpoint. Right? They were there, certainly, but they were not the main organisers of the protests, and that particular perspective was certainly not the main motivation behind the protest against Blair. And yes, Tommy O'Gorman and RTE insisted on putting that emphasis. He lied, quite frankly, about the numbers of protesters versus the number of people who were signing up for the Blair thing. He said it was 3-1 for the people wanting their book signed by Blair. That was simply not true. It was about 50-50. It might have been marginally more for the people getting their book signed, but it most certainly was not 3-1. And so you ask, what's the agenda? The Irish Times coverage of it was the same. So that's in terms of how to deal with protesters. And I think it is very true in terms of how the conflict, if you like, is represented, because you, for example, you know, on the issue of killings and so on, always or most of the time, when Israel engages in attack on Palestinian territory, the word retaliation is usually associated with it. Almost never, when there are Palestinian attacks on Israel or Israeli forces, is the word retaliation used. And there have been surveys done on it which show approximately 70 to 80% of the time the word retaliation was used by the main media outlets. In some cases, like I think NBC, never is retaliation used in terms of Palestinian attacks. So just the use of that word alone skews our understanding of it. And as Bob Fisk said, I mean, I find that all the more distressing that there's that level of imbalance when in the actual situation there is an even greater imbalance, because you're talking about the fourth biggest military power in the world against a virtually defenseless population with almost no weapons. And yet the emphasis is skewed completely towards the idea that the Palestinians are the aggressors, they are the threat, they are the dangerous ones, they are the ones engaging in unprovoked attacks, while Israel is retaliating to protect its security. And I think that's utterly biased, and it skews people's perceptions of it, and you know, needs to be challenged. You know.
Well, where I go in New Jersey, we always talk about getting our retaliation in first. And it'd be Vincent Lavery, who has spent most of his life in the United States, was talking to him earlier about his time in America and his work there, including teaching high school and for peace. And we were talking about the Irish media, and I know he was distinguishing between what he sees as kind of the tabloid media, then the kind of the highbrow media, and then meeting political journals, etc. But then you really wanted to talk about the Irish mass media, and you have an interesting notion about the line of bias. In other words, you're not interested in the question of whether it's pro-Israeli or pro-Palestinian. Isn't that right, Vincent?
Right. Thank you very much. I grew up here in Dundee, and I went to America when I was 20, and I spent 50 years in America. Back to Ireland 4 years ago. When I got off the plane at Dublin Airport, I was no biases, no preferences to Irish politics, Irish political parties,